Assalamu alaikum, greetings of peace. How are you guys doing? Welcome to the Dean Show. I'm Eddie, your host. And as always, we have an exciting program with you. This topic is very sad. It's something that really brings tears to the heart. The heart could cry, be exploding. The bombs have stopped falling, but have the children stopped dying? We have so much to talk about here. And there's someone that we're going to bring on, a Palestinian, someone who's actually in Palestine, and we want him to go ahead and also help respond to another Palestinian who actually has a lot to say on Palestine, the topic of Palestine and Israel. So let's go ahead and watch this video. Then we're going to bring our surprise guest out to respond to this individual by the name, you know him by, Nas Daily. So let's go ahead and listen to this.
This is exactly why, like, life is too short to spend years on a conflict. Like, I don't care about a piece of land. So a lot of Jews care about Israel because, you know, homeland. A lot of Palestinians care about Al-Aqsa because it's religion. But I don't care about either.
What do you care about?
Myself.
And our guest here, peace activist, Rafat Abu Aish, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam, rahmatullahi barakatuh. Thank you for joining us here on the Dean Show, brother.
Thank you for hosting me, Dean.
Are you familiar with Nas? Nas Daily?
Yes, who's not?
Yes. So what do you think? Do we need to play the video again, or did you get a chance to hear it?
Well, here we are familiar with Nas's work. And mainly we don't need to listen to one of his videos in order to know his arguments, and because we know his type of people. It's the problem is not Nas, the problem is everybody who has the same ideology or doesn't have an ideology in the first place. So the problem with people like Nas Daily that we believe in, that I think the guy suffers from a great Stockholm, or his, we call his type people who already left the Palestinian cause. And they are not in with us anymore. His way of thinking and way of speaking is the worst thing that happened to the Palestinian cause ever. Just because he was born of a Palestinian family, I don't believe he is Palestinian anymore. The Palestinian cause is a fight for freedom and for pride and for liberation and for human rights in the first place. And whenever you leave that, you leave some of your biggest values or your main values as a human in the first place. The problem with people like Nas, the story didn't start with us, and it's not us that are fighting. It's not my generation or what I dream of being or what I want, what is my future and my goals. The problem is this, what he calls conflict, is occupation, and this occupation has started 72 years ago and before, way before that. The Palestinian people were killed in their home places, were kicked out of their houses and villages, and were refugees into other countries. And their grandsons are today living in refugee camps, suffering from the worst situations in the world today, maybe. People in Gaza are under siege. They don't have any main living or basics that they can have a good life. Apartheid in the 48 areas where I live, discrimination and persecution by the Israeli police, the interfering with the Muslim prayers in Al-Aqsa. Main human rights are not here. So that's not a fight we can give up. We are not giving the option to give up or to live any other type of fight, because occupation is forcing us to fight in the first place. And because out of our humanity, we would never leave that.
So let's hear this again.
I don't care about a piece of land. So a lot of Jews care about Israel because, you know, homeland. A lot of Palestinians care about Al-Aqsa because it's religion. But I don't care about either.
What do you care about?
Myself.
That's very empty.
It's very, yeah, it seems like, okay, it's just some land. What's the big deal? Give up some land and live your life.
Yes, that's such an empty conversation he had there.
And then at the end, it's very interesting that he says, and, you know, I just care about myself.
Yes.
That's it. I mean, is it that simplistic? That's just, hey, give up some land and we can go about business. Can you talk about how is the the situation there for the average. I mean, we hear often this is a democracy here, you know, equal rights for all. But how is the day-to-day life for the Palestinian there, Palestinian Christian, Palestinian Muslim? You know, how are they living? Are they able to? We hear that the scarcity of water, electricity, healthcare, education, that open air prison, that they're like in a jail with just big walls. So is it that simple? Is it that simplified? Just give up some land and live your life. Life's too short.
Well, it's a bit different from one area to one area. But what I can say for all Palestinians that no, we're not living a basic human right life. The thing Nas is saying in that video is that if you forget about your Palestinianship, and if you forget about the history of your people, and if you forget about your cause, you can live a good life in Israel, and you can make money, you can make business, you can make stuff. I come from a society called the Naqab, the Bedouin Palestinians who live in the south of occupied Palestine, Israel today. After the year 48, 90% of my people were kicked from the people of the Naqab, were kicked out of the Naqab to Arab countries, and only 10% stayed in here. Today we are 300,000 people living in here. 140,000 of these people are living in unrecognized villages. These are towns with that people with Israeli citizenships live in there, and due to international laws, they should have same basic rights, same rights as Jews and as Israelis living in the country. But 140,000 people of these people live in 36 unrecognized villages with no electricity, no water, no basic structures. In the past 5 years only, around 11,000 houses and more, 11,000 houses were demolished in one area. The houses of these people, my people, the Bedouins in Al Naqab only.
Where do you reside? Around which area? You're here somewhere on the map, right?
Village. You can see where the word Palestine in the green map is written in all of them.
Yes.
Yeah, Palestine in the green map. It's there. I'm there.
So what does this map signify? What does this tell us for the person, layman, has no idea? You know, what does this tell us? What does this say to you?
Well, this is the occupation of Palestine, how it started and how it got into today. Before the year 48, if we're talking history, before the year 48, the Jews came in here like refugees from the Holocaust and from the terror that happened to them in the European countries. And the Palestinian people accepted them and hosted them on the shores and opened their houses for them at the time, because they were refugees suffering. And the society here, it's known, it's written in history, it's well documented, that everybody has hosted them and giving them a place to live, because these were people who are suffering in the reality. But year after year after year after year, the Zionist dream became creating, and was very obvious for us that they are creating a country over our country. They are demolishing us in order to build their country, the Israeli occupation at the time. They didn't want to be partners in the land, even though they were coming and we hosted them in the first place. But then they took piece after piece after piece after piece until they created this very awful occupational colonialist settlements regime that we are living in today.
You actually wrote about, you did a response, an academic response. You wrote a paper, an article. Is that true on this next video we're about to see?
Yes, we did. It wasn't about the video specifically about the video, but his version of speaking about the Naqab, like we chose what you're going to see in the video, that we chose this, like this was forced on us. And that we accept our faiths, and that we are staying in our lands, even though, yani, when you go to a Bedouin living in the desert, you ask him, me as a Bedouin, asking a Bedouin, what do you want to change in here? He would say, I just want Israel to not demolish my house. That's the idea. We don't have much to lose, but we don't want to win anything from occupation. We want to live with electricity, with water, with townships, and with health services, but we don't want to leave our homes and our lands, original lands, for that.
So we'll go ahead and watch this. That's really powerful. I just don't want my home taken away, demolished. I just want food. I want water. I want basic human rights. Wow.
I want a proud life.
When I grew up, I thought everybody wanted a better life. And better meant living in a big city like New York, with fast internet, good weather, and a nice Ferrari. But wake up from the dream. This is exactly the opposite of what I want, and it's where I am. It's a hut in the middle of the desert with no internet, insane heat, and instead of Ferraris, there are chicken, donkeys, camels, cats, goats, and sheep. This is the life of Bedouins, the nomads who live and love the simple but hard life. Known for being generous, hospitable, and the most respectful of guests. With no desire to get the latest iPhone or MacBook. It's hard for me and you to live this life or want it. But to that, they say...
So what was the main thing here? You were saying that people even here who are living a good life, meaning that they're happy and content with what they have, even places like this, they can get their homes taken away?
Of course. So the Zionist mentality in Al-Naqab believes that the land of Al-Naqab should not be owned by Arabs. So the problem is that they try to kick us out of their land, or they prevent us from having they wouldn't give you any services, and they wouldn't give you a permission to build a house. They wouldn't give you water flowing to your house. They wouldn't give you electricity. If you want electricity in your house, you should put solar panels and buy them on your or your own expense. If you want water, if you don't fill tanks and bring them next to your home and buy the water yourself and like bring the tank and put it, you can buy from the Israeli water company 3 times or 4 times the price that Jewish people pay in their villages, for example. So the idea, they wouldn't give you services in order for you to leave the area, but we are satisfied with our land and we don't have a problem living hardships. Just what is the main goal of this life that we are doing? Why are we so patient? Because we believe this is our land. We are under occupation, true. This is one day leaving. This is one day is going to be over. That doesn't mean I'm leaving my land. I'm not going to exchange my land for water and electricity, but that doesn't mean I don't want them. I believe that I have original rights on my land. I should get these services due to international law and due to basic law and due to the Israeli laws as an Israeli citizen. But they are not giving me that. I didn't choose not to get that. But I've been here. I'm staying here on my land. I'm always going to be here. Yeah, as much as they try to kick us out, will they prevent the services from you? Then they demolish your house, and you have stories in Al Naqab. Like the Al-Araqib village was demolished 188 times and people still keep rebuilding their houses on their places.
It's 6 a.m., but I have finally arrived to my home in Israel. But every time I mention the word Israel or Palestine, I get in trouble in the comment section.
There is no Israel, you piece of f***ing. There is no Palestine, you d***.
So to settle this issue, here is where I stand. I am a Palestinian Israeli. 69 years ago, when Israel came into existence, some Palestinians left, some got killed, and some stayed in their lands. My people stayed, and for the next 70 years, we lived under Israel. There are two ways I can live my life. One, I say Israel does not exist, and I come only from Palestine. Or two, I accept the borders of Israel, and I accept the new borders of Palestine, and I move on. I choose number two, to move on, because in life there are better and bigger things to focus on than the name of a piece of land. There is an Israel, and there is a Palestine. I grew up in Israel, right next to Palestine, and I'm jet lagged. That's 1 minute. See you tomorrow.
Okay, seems like he's got the answer. What do you think? I mean, seems like he's got a solution here. What do you think of his solution?
Brother, this guy has the worst terminology I've ever seen in my life. Like, the first problem with what he says. I'm leaving the whole idea and what he's suggesting. And the first problem with his speech is his terminology. It wasn't the existence of Israel. It was the occupation of Palestine. It wasn't a country that was built out of nothing. It was a country that was took out of its people, and people were trying to decide their fate at the time. Palestine was a working mechanism. The people were developing and trying to get out of one occupation in order to build their own life. We were ruled by the British. We were occupied by the British regime at the time. But people in Jaffa and in Haifa and in Beer Sebeir were building their own life. You had newspapers coming out. You had theaters. You had cinema. You had people working. You had four million boxes of orange that being produced in Jaffa and were sold to Europe. And the place here was known. It's not only a piece of land, it's culture, it's a heritage, it's our pride as a people that was taken and that we are fighting to retrieve. It was never a piece of land, and him thinking about it as a piece of land, so I think he's the one who should leave it. The ethical burden is not on the occupied, it's on the occupier in the Palestinian cause, first place.
Can you fill us in on what's going on with Masjid al-Aqsa right now? We saw earlier during the month of Ramadan, the soldiers storming in there, throwing the stun grenades, you know, fires. We saw all sorts of havoc. You know, has things calmed down? What's the situation with al-Aqsa?
It's more quiet now, but that doesn't mean that they're like people are being the Jerusalem people, al-Maqdisiyun, are being punished in the streets and arrested. I had a few friends who were arrested in the past few weeks, and me myself was arrested, and my little brother, after the Al-Aqsa events, and after the whole 48 events that happened in the past few weeks. We had a very intense few weeks with the war in Gaza and the Israeli crimes on Gaza at the time. What happened, what started all of this? For example, of course, everybody heard about, I think, the case of Al-Sheikh Jarrah. These are the houses of Palestinians, Palestinian families, around 500 Palestinian families, that the Israeli government is trying to kick them out of it in order to put settlers in their place. And that's a very, very known apartheid scenario that happens in Israel all the time. It happened here in the Naqab by kicking the people of Umm al-Hiran, a Bedouin town, and building the settlement of Hiran on their place. That's happening right now also. So what happened in Al-Aqsa started from the Israeli government trying to bring all the time, they are like supporting the settler organizations, that they are achieving the Zionist mentality of having a Jewish Aqsa and Jewish Jerusalem. At the time, Israeli Jerusalem, a Zionist Jerusalem. So every year they try to bring settlers inside our worshipping place, the Muslim part, Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Aqsa Yard. So it's a main right for Palestinians and Muslims to not agree to settlers who steal their lands and who burn Palestinian villages and who are coming in there out of making us feel bad and making it normal for them to steal the Al-Aqsa from us and to steal areas from Al-Aqsa. So every year they try to do that. We don't agree to that, and we have always been saying that. And as it's known international law, Al-Aqsa is an international area. This area is not, this quarter is not an Israeli in the first place, and the whole city of Jerusalem. So the Israeli government tried to bring settlers in there. When the people said no, it started bombing people and shooting rubber bullets. I was photographing there at the time, and I've seen the atrocities that the Israeli government, Israeli police did to the people. They entered inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, gassed people, and they shot people with rubber bullets, and they were assaulting people on the grounds and when they are handcuffed also.
What do you say to the common reiterated statement that, look, this is for the safety of Israel and these Palestinians are terrorists? They're terrorizing us and we're just trying to protect ourselves. We need to survive. Do you often hear this?
Yes, we do. We do. We are here. Yeah. In the past few weeks, the Arab 48 people, the Palestinians who have Israeli citizenships, who stayed here after the Nakba, we were lynched in the streets. We were chased by settlers. We had settlers shooting at our houses and trying to kidnap children from their towns and looking, searching, roaming the mingled cities there, the Arab Jewish cities, in order to find Arabs to beat them in the street. The Israeli police would give them protection. We are talking about Israeli cities. We're talking about these settlers are looking for Arabs who have Israeli citizenships. Let's not talk about the Palestinians, but we are all the Palestinians. That's how the Israeli government sees us, and that's who we are. In the first place. So the problem is not me being Muslim or Palestinian. The problem is that this is the Zionist mentality. These settlers search for us in the streets, and when they find their Arab, they lynch that Arab and they beat the Arab in the street. They killed Musa Hassouni in Al-Lid, and they killed another Shaheed in Umm al-Fahm. The problem here is that they are being protected by the police, and they are also fulfilling police. Even ministers of Israel said that this is they are continuing the work of the Israeli forces and the Israeli police. So it's an apartheid regime. It's a big system. It's a democracy for the Jews, and they what they see and they what they want to do is to make it a fully Israeli Zionist Jewish state.
When you see this statement from a former U.S. President, Jimmy Carter, is this pretty on point? When Israel territory deep within the West Bank and connects the 200 so settlements with each other with a road and then prohibits the Palestinians from using that road or in many cases even crossing that road, this perpetuates even worse instances of apartheidness or apartheid than we witness even in South Africa. What do you think of this statement?
Well, we live that. Yeah, when we're reading about this South African experience, apartheid is true and apartheid is here. The problem is that these white people are much smarter than the other white people that were in South Africa. Yes.
What about the children? We see a lot of children being kidnapped from their families, young children. What's going on with that?
In the past 3 weeks, Dean, more than 3,000 Arab Palestinians from the 48 areas were arrested in the Naqab only, my area. More than 60 to 70% of the people who were arrested were children. Using the children is a way to scare the families and to put pressure on them. Most of the children, like maybe 90% of them, will come out of the jail. And the grown-ups, but let's talk about the children. They come beating, their bones will be broken, they will have injuries in their faces, and they will be put in jail and put in there for weeks, even if they don't have any proofs on them. So it's a way to scare the people. It's a way to put pressure on the families. But alhamdulillah, yeah, people are sabir, are patient.
So tell us, we often hear this in this area, Jafar? The area where they're evicting the Palestinians, Sheikh Jafar.
Sheikh Jarrah. Yeah.
Sheikh Jarrah. This area, the common excuse is that, look, the landlords are evicting the tenants. So we rented this out, and now, hey, they didn't pay their rent, so we're evicting them. So this is what everyone in the mainstream is usually hearing. What do you say to that?
What rent? These people built their houses in there. These houses they built with their hands. They were there. Well, it's the problem is with the basics. The whole land of Palestine. And then to solve the problems, we also should go always to the basics. The whole land of the Palestinian people was stolen in the year 48, was occupied by the Israeli police. The people were kicked or killed from their homes. And this ethnic cleansing that happened in the year 48 is continuing until today. And they are kicking people out of their houses or to make it as Jewish as they can. You saw that map that makes how small Palestinian areas are today and how big they were before and how much was taken from us. They are trying to narrow that and to make it smaller and smaller all the time. And there is something important, sorry, Dean. Well, about Jerusalem, the problem is not only Sheikh Jarrah. There are today around four neighborhoods, Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, that the people in there are being evicted, and the Israeli court and the Israeli police is trying to evict the people, but then you would have to go to the Israeli court, who the judge is also a settler and is trying to evict you in the first place. There's nowhere for the Palestinians to go. But there are another three neighborhoods that are the Israeli government is trying to evict, and they are putting pressure every day on the people. They are trying to kick the people out before, and it's very important to know that before they try to kick the people out, they try to buy their homes. They pay tens of millions of shekels for the people to leave their houses, but the people don't leave their houses and they don't sell it to the Jews when they cannot buy the houses from the people. So how can I evict you if I'm in the first place admitting that it's your house and trying to buying it from you? when you're not selling me, I bring the Israeli police and the Israeli army to take you out of the house and they put a settler in your place. So there are more than one neighborhood in Jerusalem. And inside the old city of Jerusalem, it happened a lot. You go to the Al-Aqsa Mosque and you see how many houses they already stole, how many houses they kick the people out of them. There are houses that are very stuck to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and you have Israeli flags on them. And they are well heavily guarded with families of settlers. They are trying to make it a Jewish, to make the Muslim quarter a Jewish quarter. And some people do it out of religious reasons, but for me, and for the people of Palestine, we know it's not religious at all. It's a national fight. He's fighting us because we are Arabs. They are trying to make it a Zionist area as much as they can, trying to delete our history, to make us out of the existence. That's what they do all the time by covering our refugee towns that they kicked us out of them, and by covering the history and trying to change the story all the time when it comes to media, when it comes to the places, to the names of the streets. They don't want us to be here. And they're trying to cover even that we were here in the first place, and we are staying.
Just a few more questions. We're almost out of time. Have you heard this term, the Third Temple? And last time we had our guest, Miko Pilled. He's also he's Israeli Jewish. He's an activist, somebody who is really.
He's a great friend.
He's a friend of yours also, yes. And he talked about that this was a fringe element, but now it's catching momentum. How much do you know, and you can tell us about this Third Temple movement? Do you know much about it?
Yes, we do, because we have been hearing that since we were kids, that we were talking about it, and they're trying to scare the Arabs with that. But it's a real case. They are digging under the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they are digging under the Jerusalem area.
So this is not a conspiracy theory now. This is not like people making this up. This is actually happening.
Settlers are speaking about that honestly. The Israeli government is trying to do that honestly. If there was the cause of the Al-Rahma Mosque, which is a mosque in the Muslim quarter next to Al-Aqsa Mosque, they tried for a year to take that mosque out of the Arabs and to put settlers in there. That's why they're trying to bring the settlers all the time in there to make them earn a spot with the time. So the people at some day will stop fighting and will stop refusing that the settlers be there. They're trying to force this thing on them. So I believe that the Israelis can do anything. Me, myself. They can do everything, and they're willing to do everything in order to achieve their Zionist view and their Zionist idea.
We have an Israeli, and this, I'll end with this. We have an Israeli professor who's quoted as saying, this is an academic historian, that Islam saved the Jewry. And because often you'll hear the statements that when you speak up, they try to against not Jewish people. You know, we know there was a history. Can you tell us also that, you know, the like you were saying earlier, that the Muslims welcomed the Jews? That when the Jews were being persecuted, you know, they came into Muslim lands. But as soon as you talk about this oppression, about, hey, I want some, you know, some rights, some human rights, some dignity. I want to live like a human being. You know, anybody who looks into this and has the humanness in them, they just, people who have come from all walks of life and just come to visit that area, they see the injustices. But as soon as you start to speak up and talk out, they label you with this term anti-Semitic. But it's interesting, you're Semitic, right? You follow a prophet who's Semitic. You speak a Semitic language. How can you be anti-Semitic? What do you say to that?
Well, you should know that's like a great joke for us, the Arab people, when we speak politics. Like that, the same question that you're asking now, we always ask. But the idea is that we are controlled so much by the propaganda and by the people who support Israel are the people who are setting the terms for politically correct words and speeches and talks. So we are Semitic. We are the sons of Abraham, alhamdulillah. And when it comes to peace, because I don't believe in that version of anti-Semitism, because I'm Semitic in the first place. So we always answer that to the Israelis if we are in discussions, even though they bring the cups with them to the discussions. But what we talk about more than the anti-Semitism part. For me, I think that they use that abroad a lot much more than what they use that here, because they know the truth. about Semitism, the Israelis, but abroad, it's like their first defense line in propaganda against everybody who speaks on Israel. What's the connection between Israel and the real Judaism? Just today, I was in another panel with Naftali Kart, a rabbi, who was talking that Israel is the biggest menace and the biggest crime that was done to Judaism ever.
So you were on another panel with another rabbi.
Yes.
So true. You have a lot of Israeli and Jewish friends.
Not a lot, but for me, to have an Israeli Jewish friend, he should believe on the rights of Palestinians to liberate and their historical rights on their lands, and he should take a part in the fight if he's here. Yani, for me, I don't find any. I wouldn't find any right for an Israeli, for a Jewish guy to be here in Israel, except if he's fighting the fight of the Palestinians. He is the strong part, and he owes the Palestinians a lot. So we believe in people who believe in justice. We believe in people who believe in peace. But peace doesn't come by crushing the weak side. And we have been weakened for 70 years and more as Palestinians.
So concluding now, if anybody, we've had people who just recommended that, you know, when politicians from here, when Christians, because it's not even Palestinians who are Christians are being oppressed. Is that right?
True.
So true. So yeah. The Christians from here who want to visit, they want to get a taste of it for themselves. Politicians from here, I mean, are they more than welcome? Wouldn't it be fair and balanced if we've heard people advise them, just come to the other side, come visit the Palestinians and come talk to us? Are you willing to talk?
There was only one thing. Sorry, Dane, for cutting you. There was only one thing that Nas Daily said right in the Bedouin video, is that the Bedouin people are very hospitable and they invite people to their homes. And that's something that all Palestinians and the Arabs share. We love inviting people and we love talking to people. We don't ask people for stuff. That's something that we have been learning that since we were kids. And hospitality is a main part of our society. I think people should come here and see. And when they come and see, and not go, and they should listen from the Arabs, and they should go to the street, because this is a cause of human values in the first place, the Palestinian cause. We're not trying to look as victims, but this is the situation that is here. We believe in our pride, and the whole thing that for me myself, that I believe in and I'm fighting for and I'm advocating for is my pride and my people's pride in the first place. I believe that people who are interested, people who want to hear their story, and before somebody says one word out of propaganda and what he hears in the news about the Israeli, what they call the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and we know it's occupation, is to come and see and visit, to see the wall in the West Bank, to see what's happening in Al-Aqsa, to see the unrecognized villages in Al-Nakba, to see the killing of people and the arrest of Palestinians of the 48 and what's happening to them. One question that you asked before about the history and how the Islam said the Jews and how we the Islam's treated the Jews. It's very important to mention that the first time after Islam that the Muslims entered the Al-Aqsa, Muslims, we're not talking about Palestinians that were here before, but the Muslims that the Islam when came from Shibh al-Jazeera at the time, it was Umar bin al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu, the third Khalifa of Islam, the second Khalifa of Islam. Umar bin al-Khattab, when he came to Al-Aqsa, he made a deal with the Christians of Al-Aqsa and with the people of Al-Aqsa, all of them, with all religions. It's called Al-Uhd al-Umariyya. He gave them the protection. That this is something that continued through all the Islamic states after. Al-Uhd al-Umariyya was a main law and base to dealing with people who are not, and also Quran before, to deal with people who are not Muslim. You would never touch their worshipping places. You will never judge them for something they didn't know. You would never persecute them for religion or try to make them leave their religion. Whoever is convinced by Islam, for example, he can go to Islam. But you wouldn't force anyone to do anything that they don't want. You wouldn't even force them to fight in the Islamic army when you have another country attacking you or something like that. So it's I think people should read about Al-Uhd al-Umariyya more and should really go to the Islamic and Arabic history to know how it was here. It was always peace. Everybody was giving their place to pray. For example, for Christians, Umar bin Khattab didn't pray inside the church from Qiyamah. the resurrection church, because he didn't want the Muslims with the history to come and pray in his spot. And then he said, لِيُزَحِمُوكُمْ فِي مَكَانِ عِبَادَتِكُمْ, which is to come and be crowded. It's going to be crowded for you guys. And yeah, one of the things in Al-Ahd Al-Umari was people will not touch or break or harm your crosses, for example, or your churches or whatever. So yeah.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. So you do have even Holocaust survivors, Jewish Holocaust survivors, who are speaking out against this. Dr. Matag, I don't know if you've heard of him. Then you have other people, your friend, our friend, Miko Pilid. So
there's Ilan Pape also.
What's his name?
Ilan Pape.
Ilan Pape. Dr. Finkelstein. Norman Finkelstein.
Yeah, I think I heard the name. Yeah.
Yeah. Who else? Who else?
There is a lot. You should Google just.
Yeah. So this Holocaust is just for people to know. This is not a Jewish Muslim thing. This is the truth thing. This is about the humanness, you know, human rights, people who just want the basic human rights that you and I get to have every single day. And I hope that with God Almighty's help, God Almighty Allah, this can be achieved. And anything else you want to close with? And if people want to visit, they want to visit down there and they want to see for themselves. They don't want to go to Disneyland this year. They want to come down and they want to see for themselves what's going on. They're sick of the lies, the propaganda. What do you recommend?
People are welcome in the first place. I would always invite people to Al-Maqab, to my place and to our living place, to our areas. We love when people visit, and we love when people want to learn, and we respect everybody who want to know the truth. And we feel that the Israel propaganda is lying to everybody everywhere. So most of the work today is trying to uncover the truth and tell people about what's really happening here, because people have been lied to for decades. We invite people everywhere, and I know that every other Palestinian activist invites people to come visit in Bethlehem, in here, in the West Bank, and then Al-Naqab in the 48.
People share many nightmare stories. Is it very difficult? Do they have to, if they wanted to come, they're watching a Deen show, they say, hey, I'm going to go ahead and visit, experience this. But is it very challenging? I heard people getting, you know, going through so many checkpoints and being held for days. Like, what's the process of someone, if they wanted to come to that area and visit? Is it?
I think for Americans and for people with the foreign nationalities, not Arab people, not Muslim people, you should just come to the airport, show them that you are pro-Israeli, speak pro-Israeli language. And then for me, for example, as an Arab and as a dark skin, I would go myself to the room, that dark room in the airport, that they will check me and they treat you as an Arab at the end of the case. But people can come here, and just, you should come as a tourist. Like, you should say that you are touring. And don't show your real ideas and thoughts when you are coming in or getting out.
Thank you so much. Jazakallah khair. Thank you for sharing all that with us.
Barakallah fiik.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salam.